Hello, welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. My guest today, Lucy Kaplansky. Lucy has a brand new album, Last Days of Summer. Let's start this part of the program off with the title cut, Last Days of Summer. Then we're going to talk to Lucy about this great album she's just released. 9 albums before this. She's been on several different albums with different people and toured around with different groups of folks. You're going to like this title cut, Last Days of Summer, from Lucy Kaplansky's brand new album, Last Days of Summer. For the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, just heard a gorgeous song. It happens to be the title cut from a brand new album. You heard Last Days of Summer, and it's an album from my guest today. I'm awfully happy to get a chance to talk to Lucy Kaplansky. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm thrilled. The song Last Days of Summer is boy. There's so many great songs, by the way. And this is songs you've written. You have such a sampling of music. Of different writers and different styles, all the way from Jackson Browne to Nancy Sinatra, which I think is a cool way to finish off an album. I just thought that was so great. That and by the way, I think Nancy Sinatra was such a powerful video. I think she's overlooked as far as her star ability, and she was a big selling star. I mean, Nancy Sinatra was huge.
She was huge, yeah. And that is such a great song. I mean, such a great song.
Yeah. The video's still pretty cool, too, if you can find it.
I know. I saw it. Yes. I watched it.
I'm just amazed by her. But, yeah, that's a great cut of that. And then I'm going to talk about a lot of these songs. But these days, Jackson Browne, he's, what, 15 or 16? You do a beautiful version of both of those songs, by the way. But
thank you very much.
Jackson Browne is like, what, 15, 16, he writes these days.
I think I read that he was 16.
Yeah, so think about it.
It's insane.
It's crazy. Think about, you wrote that song, and then you thought, I'm done. You wouldn't have thought, I need to go any further. You could think, I don't have to do anything else, because it's almost the perfect song for not just a 16-year-old, but there's so many emotions that go through that song, and it's just
It's perfect. Kind of a perfect song, period.
It really is. I think that's true. Listen, the audience, I know you. And I've seen you perform. I have several of your albums available to me. I want to talk about this new Last Days of Summer. Before I forget, I'll do this at the end also, but I want you to mention the label. I always ask for the label and how people can find this album. So just do that now and get it out of the way. I'll come back to it later.
Sure. So it's my own label, Lucy Ricky Records. And the only way anyone can hear this is to get it through me, which is my website, lucykaplansky.com, or at my shows. It's not on any streaming services. It's not through any third parties. This is a new sort of model of marketing that I feel like I invented.
Well, if you're taking CDs to concerts, are you still carrying CDs?
Absolutely.
I had a conversation on another show that's coming up soon. An old timer to me and in the music business, Ronnie Reno, is a friend of mine, Ronnie is one of the old school bluegrass guys, and he's going all digital. Everything's digital. He's releasing, and he's not releasing anything, so he's got this incredible backlog of all this music that he's done with his dad, with his bands, with the Osborne Brothers, or you name it. And he's decided that he's all going all digital. You can just get it digitally and pay for the rights to listen on whatever platform you want to listen to. So he's not going to make, I guess you could go find an individual song, but I'm glad that you're doing this. I'm glad that you're making the songs available on that website, and also that you're still, I'm still just old enough, Lucy, that I like to have a CD in my hand.
Well, a lot of my audience is of a certain age, and honestly, a lot of my audience still buys CDs. So when I say it's available through my website, it's not just the digital version, it's actually autographed CDs are available through
awesome.
My website.
Very good.
And I've sold a bunch of them. So, yes, if people
Good.
Are into CDs, they are available through me.
I miss the LPs. I get that that's not coming back to the level that it did. And I understand that I got a basement full of LPs. But I also have a lot of CDs, and I don't want those to go away. I just think that would be a horrible thing.
I agree.
It's a great thing.
I agree.
I'm glad you're doing that. Tell me a little bit about this Days of Summer. I hate to relate everything to personal to me, but I can relate to this song. The audience has heard it, but a little bit about behind the Last Days of Summer.
Well, I wrote it, and I just want to mention that all the songs are co-written with my husband, Rick Litvin, hence
sure.
Lucy Ricky Records.
Sure.
I wrote it last summer in July and August, just before our daughter was about, we have one child, before she was about to go to college, for the, you know, to leave home.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was dreading her leaving. And I had, I, you know, looking back, I had been dreading it for a really long time. And I tried to capture sort of all of that in this one song, how, you know, proud, how proud we are and were, and how sad also to let her go. So that's what it's about. And I've been really gratified by sort of the reaction this song has gotten. This seems to be the song that people really respond to. I guess it's a very universal thing for anybody who's had a kid. Kids leave home,
right,
if all goes well. And it's very, it's so part of life, but it's also so incredibly sort of gut-wrenching. It was for me.
Oh, I think
and
so.
Now
it
I'm
is.
Fine. I was fine like 3 days later. But when she left, I fell apart for a day or two.
It's kind of like the first day of school in general. You just think, how could this be happening?
Yeah,
this is more permanent.
The first day of school, they come home.
That's right.
And they're still in their room. And, you know, for me, looking at her empty bed was really kind of devastating for a couple of days. Like, it clearly, you know, it wasn't just that she was physically gone, because actually the truth is she's literally going to college in our neighborhood, NYU. We live there. My husband teaches there. Mm. So it's not like she was far away, but it was more sort of metaphorically, symbolically.
It was
the end of something. And it really was the end of something. And that's what was hitting me so hard.
The song, some of the words in the song, I'm not going to repeat them all because I just heard it, but it talks about, you really described the changes that the room that you mentioned goes through. And like you say at the end, it's that she's not in there anymore, but the room is done this way. And then, like you say, she's not that far away. But part of the song is looking back at the uses of the room that she grew up in. And then now it becomes a room that, I don't know, I guess it can be a studio or whatever. But, I think the way the song progresses through her, like you said, it's not about her physically being gone, but there seems to be this comeback to the room that it all started at.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, of course, I hadn't thought about that consciously at all. But I guess that's right. I mean, the room is where her absence is kind of the most stark.
That's where her presence was.
And her room, it was always her world.
Right.
You know, and she's an only child. So that was where she did everything. And then all of a sudden, she's just gone. Mm-hmm. So I guess the room, well, I guess, yeah. I mean, I didn't see the empty room when I wrote the song because it was before she left. But I guess I was thinking about that empty room.
Well, I mean, I think it's a great song.
Thank you.
Sure. Hey, listen, I want to do this with you. We're going to talk about more of the music. I'm going to have you introduce a couple songs later, but I need your help on this. I think I figured it out. When we were first exchanging information about it, can we do this? How can we make this work as far as you being a guest on Unreal Bluegrass? I kept thinking, I remember the first time that I saw you. And I remember one of the people that I'm pretty sure you were with. It was a trio. But let me tell you this. It was at Hamilton, Ohio, Miami University. There's a branch there in Hamilton, Ohio. They had the greatest concert series ever. It was run by my friend Howard Epstein. And he finally retired. And then eventually with COVID hit, it collapsed the whole concert series, which was just one of the greatest things ever.
That's too bad.
It is. I'm convinced it was a wonderful venue. You were there probably, if not once, twice. I remember the first time I saw you. And I am convinced that it was you. I was very impressed with. I didn't know you then. Didn't know your music. John Gorka, I think, was part of that trio. And I knew of John. I think I knew of John. I had some of his music. I didn't have any of yours just because I just didn't have it. I did after that. I bought one from you that night. And I think the other guy, I've given this a lot of thought, I think was Cliff Eberhardt.
Okay, then I know what it was. At least I think I know what it was.
Good, because I just have this memory.
It was me and John and Cliff and Cheryl Wheeler.
That's right. That's right, Cheryl Wheeler was there. That's right.
Yeah, so, Yeah, we did a bunch of shows. It was called On a Winter's Night or On a Summer's
Night.
That's
right. That's right.
Something like that.
That's
and
right.
It was sort of in the round. And yes.
Very small venue in a college-type amphitheater. And
I have no memory of this. Believe you.
Well, then I could have said you were there with anybody, and you wouldn't have.
You could have.
Okay.
And I
well,
probably
then,
would have said, okay, that's
we're
going to
stick with those four, because when you mentioned Cheryl Wheeler, that all brings it together. So anyway, I was.
Yeah.
This is just, I'm not talking about, I don't want to talk about me, but I was absolutely captured by the music from all the artists. I knew of John Gorka. I probably had music by him. I bought music from you following that, and Cheryl Wheeler and Cliff. And it's just one of those wonderful things where all these great folk singers, and I think these venues are still existent, and you can maybe fill me in on that. But that was a nice small college venue, which was perfect for that show. And it used to be everywhere that you could find great shows, not just you, but you and other people, and other artists, and just a combination. It didn't have to be like a worldwide tour. It was, you know, come from Northeast. This is Hamilton, Ohio. It's just, you know, 45 minutes north of Cincinnati, basically where I'm at. And it was a blast. It was a blast, and I hope that those venues haven't been swallowed up by COVID. I hope you're going to tell me that you see the end of the light with as you're coming out with this album.
I mean, I think, you know, there certainly have been some venue closures, absolutely, because of COVID and other forces. But there is still a very vibrant circuit of venues. I mean, I can tell you I'm doing... when the fall comes, I've got a lot of gigs. So I think venues are alive and well, and people want to go to shows. I mean, you know, some of the shows, masks are required, others not so much, but people want to go to shows. They are missing live music.
I sense that it's coming back. I only go to one large festival a year, and it's up in Oak Hill, New York. It's Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival, which is bluegrass plus 1,000 different other types of music. Great, great show. I go to that one. It's an outdoor event. It's been canceled the last 2 years, and I can't wait. It's been a couple of weeks. I can't wait to go back there and see the live music again and let the artists do what they do, which is experience a live audience and get that feedback. And it's just a big – it's almost like a big loop, a feedback loop, except you don't get that horrible sound where everybody feeds off of each other. And it's a wonderful experience. I'm glad you have those options that are becoming open.
Yeah, there's nothing like live music, and it's irreplaceable. I mean, you know, Zoom or, it's not the same.
Mm-mm.
It's not the same. People will always want to see live music. So I think it's not going away. It's not going away.
No, I don't. When COVID first started, and didn't tell you we were going to talk about this, but people were scrambling with, how do we do this thing then? So the skills on that Zoom or whatever apparatus they used improved greatly. And all of a sudden you had really nice microphones in people's living rooms. And, yeah, it was fun to watch and see people, but it was not the same. But that was what they did. And now I think that's a skill that will carry forward. I think there will be some either lessons or some smaller events that will be broadcast through some medium like that. But I do think that they got a lot smarter as it went on, because they had to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know I did.
Sure.
I definitely learned how to do, you know, a video performance that actually sounded good.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about Independence Day. Then I'm going to ask you about this Carter Family song. But Independence Day is the fourth song on the album, and it's not about the 4th of July.
Well, no, it's not.
That's on my mind because it's coming up, that's all.
What?
4th of July is on my mind because it's coming up.
Well, right, that's right. It's really about a friend of mine who basically left her family, or left parts of her family, because it was not a healthy place to be. I mean, families can be... wonderful sources of comfort and safety and love, and they can also not be that. And she realized at a certain point that this was not a place that was good for her. And so it's the Independence Day refers to
her independence. Yeah.
leaving them behind,
yeah.
for good reasons and in a good way.
It's still very hard to think about, but yeah, the song leads you to no other conclusion that this is something that had to happen.
Had to happen.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
No question about it.
And I never did. I didn't intend to make. So it's part of it is spoken, and I literally just had the idea. I'd written I think, most of the lyrics, and I had kind of music, sort of, and then I thought, what if I do it like A Boy Named Sue? And I went back and listened to A Boy Named Sue,
okay.
And I thought, that could be kind of cool, and then I played for my husband, and he said, that totally works.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a departure, because a chunk of it is actually spoken.
Yeah, it is.
Which
it is
fun.
Yeah. For the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, of course, you mentioned the Carter family, and if they listen to this show or any other show, they know who the Carter family is. And you've done a nice version of Gold Watch and Chain, which is about as bluegrassy Carter family as you can get.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I learned that song like 40 years ago. I'm a big Emmylou Harris fan, and she recorded that, and I think on her album Roses in the Snow.
Yeah.
And I ended up singing it at my own wedding with a little sort of bluegrass trio. And I, you know, my husband always loved the way I sang it. And I needed sort of an up-tempo song for the album. And I was kind of searching around, and I said, what about that? And he thought that was a great idea. And then I said to Duke Levine, who's the multi-instrumentalist, who's so great on this album and so great in general. He's out with Bonnie Raitt right now. What if you do flat picking guitar on this? And he said, great idea. Mm-hmm. And then we did it in like one take. And it was just really fun.
It's always good.
It's a beautiful song.
It is. It really is. It really is. And it's gone through so many iterations that still just, it's a classic.
I mean, it holds up. Yeah.
Thank you. That's the word that I said, the term that I wanted to find. It holds up well, Lucy. Thank
yeah.
you. And I'm a big fan of Nancy Griffith. Saw her as many times as I could within, you know, 100 miles. You do, 40 Condoline. Now there's a dobro in that, so we can say that's kind of bluegrass, I think, where you get one of those.
Oh, it's definitely bluegrass.
Yeah, I think so.
It's
I
mandolin and dobro and guitar. And I actually sang with Nancy quite a bit over the years. And I've done a couple of Nancy Griffith songs. I did another one on my last album. What song was it? I Wish It Would Rain. And you know, again, I just sort of needed an up-tempo song. And I actually had never sung 40 Condoline. And I thought, well, I'll try it with these great musicians. It's Mike Rivard on bass, and then Duke was playing the dobro and mandolin. He overdubbed the dobro. And again, we sort of nailed it in one take. It was like, okay, this works. It just sort of made sense, and it felt great to us. And it's a great song. And it's like a lot of fun. And my understanding is it's partly about Rosalie Sorrells, who Nancy knew.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a great song, and it's it was a lot of fun to record it.
Well, it's a nice version. When I come across, what I do is I listen to music, and I listen, and I get ready to talk to Lucy. I'm listening, and I recognize so many of these things, but then I listen in detail because I want to know a little bit about it. Because I think you're worth the time. I think every artist that comes on the show is worth the time. And I am a big Nancy Griffith song. I'm a fan. I've seen her, I can't tell you how many times.
And so much too.
Great music. I mean, just one of those people that, tiny little person, and a power of
incredible force of nature.
A force of nature. It's almost like you're a songwriter or a wordsmith. You keep filling it into my sentences. Let's do this. Let's do your introduction to Requiem, which I have a big circle. It says beautiful song, and then we'll play Requiem for the audience, and I'll come back and talk to you some more, and we'll talk a little bit more, then I'll let you go. So do for me an intro for Requiem off of Last Days of Summer.
Sure. So it's sort of a tribute to some friends of mine, a couple of different friends who have suffered sort of horrendous, unimaginable losses. I guess trying to imagine myself in that position, because of course I've never suffered an unimaginable loss, I've been so inspired by their strengths. The strength to go on, the strength to believe that their loved one's spirit is out there. And I think part of what inspired me was the idea that sort of the magnificence and timelessness of nature, is a place where their loved ones' spirits can be found. So that's kind of what inspired it. And the stuff with the Beatles, there's listening to Beatles songs, that really, I mean, this is, you know, it's not about anyone in particular. And that, my daughter, who's 19 now, is a humongous Beatles fan.
And she should be.
Right. And we have spent just, I don't know, thousands of hours in the car listening to Beatles songs. So that was just sort of a frame to kind of put, to place this lost person. Does that make sense?
It does. And it's a beautiful, I have encircled on my notes, beautiful song. And I have a star by it. So that's yes.
Thank you.
So you're explaining all the reasons why I was taken by it. So let's do this now. We're going to play Requiem from Last Days of Summer. I'm talking to Lucy Kaplansky, which we'll come back and talk to her after we hear Requiem. Beautiful song. Let's do that now. All right, that was the song, Requiem. I just think it's there's a lot of beautiful songs on this, Lucy, but Requiem, I've got stars and circles on it, which means it must have
Thank
been
you very much. It means a lot to me.
Oh,
thank
you're,
you.
You're welcome. Let's talk about Mary's Window. I have some notes by that, and I have I have the word. Tell me why did I write down the cadence? What was I thinking of when I wrote down the cadence of this song?
Well, there is the cadence. Cadence is a word that's used in the song. So some of these songs most of them were written during the pandemic, and we...
Well, I was going to ask you that. I'm glad you said that. Thanks.
Yeah, so we live in New York City, and we were very, very lucky to be able to escape from New York when the catastrophe hit New York. So we were out of New York in the country for months, and I was thinking a lot about how much people were losing. I mean, aside from the illness and the death, I mean, you know, which was horrific enough, that people were losing this wonderful part of life, which is just it's actually a term called weak ties, where you talk with the person in the grocery store, you talk with the librarian, you talk with the barista, you catch up, you have small talk, and so that's what inspired the song. Like, what's it like to lose that? And then it started out being a very dark song about loss. And then I decided I didn't want to write a dark song, and it ended up being a song about
survivor.
A bunch of things. Well, mm-hmm. survival mm-hmm. and also our country, and I don't want to get into politics here, but our country standing up for what's right and what's good in the last election, and transitioning away from a toxic situation to a hopeful situation. And I'm trying to avoid.
I know what you're doing.
I have
another note that I have is timely and political, and that's the way I.
Well,
think
it is
so,
political,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
I mean, I'm very political. So, you know, it was partly inspired by Joe Biden's inauguration, and Amanda Gordon's beautiful poem.
Wasn't that cool?
Amazing.
Wasn't that so cool?
So it was sort of. Things are terrible, but we're going to make them. We're going to stand up and make them better. And people are, at bottom, people are good and kind, most people. And the kindness will win, and hope will win. And that's kind of what the song's about.
Yeah, that's what I get from it. And I think it's in that vein. And whatever the backdrop is for it, I think it applies to every situation and every person, and Mary looking out of her window. And I think that's a nice place to come back and revisit as things change or don't change. But I like the song. Well, so let me tell you, ask you this then. And my purpose is never, by the way, Lucy, just to say, what did you mean when you write this song? I just have questions about stuff. And I don't want you to interpret for the listener. They should do that. But me, as a listener, Song of the Exile begins in New York in 1995. I don't have a reference mm-hmm. point for that. So tell
right.
me about that.
It was inspired by an actual taxi ride that my husband and I took. And we started, it was a very memorable taxi driver. And we started literally writing the song back then, and nothing ever came of it, this story of this cab driver. And then about a year before the pandemic hit, I just thought, for God's sake, Lucy, see if you can make something of this. There's a story in here. And I kind of enlarged it about, it became about the stories of the immigrants. I mean, most cab drivers in New York are immigrants.
Yeah.
who have come to New York, who have come to the U.S. to make a better life for their families, just like my grandparents did from Poland, you know, in the early 1900s. So I guess the other thing that it's supposed to be about is that these people, their stories are so beautiful and powerful, and they work so hard, and they're sort of the unsung treasures of New York. That's kind of what I had in mind.
Okay. I like that. I did the New York 1995. I tried to think, whether these things are connected to something I should recognize. Well, of course, I wasn't in the cab with you and your husband in New York in 1995, so I couldn't really place that.
Right.
So we've covered a lot of the music. I really enjoyed the album is Last Days of Summer. We've talked a little bit about Jackson Browne and These Days, and if there was a song that we have mentioned this already, that you could say as an author, you wrote that one, you could be done. You could be done and never have to look back. I mean, except that you want to, and he's done. He's touring now with a new record.
He kept going. Yeah, that's really right.
He decided not to stop. Right. And then we talked a little bit about These Boots Are Made for Walking, which, you know, Nancy Sinatra was a big part of the 60s. No, she still draws a lot of water where she goes and makes her presence known. But she was a huge, I mean, movies aside, she did movies. Her dad was maybe the greatest vocal singer ever to come out of America. But she had the voice, and she did all those great things. And so you did a version of These Boots Are Made for Walking, which I was happy to see on here. I like the song, and I like to see somebody go back and readdress it.
Well, it's a great song, and I started doing it in my live shows, I don't know, like 8 years ago.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so, that's how it ended up on the album, because it's so much fun to sing, and audiences really
everybody
like
knows
it.
Everybody has to know it, right? I'm sure they all know the song.
They absolutely know. Yeah. Everybody knows the bass line.
Yeah,
God's
that's
sake.
Right. That's right. That's right. When you say that, and you know, remember she did those things. Well, of course you do with the guy named, what was his name, Hazelwood or
Lee Hazelwood, yeah, is the guy who wrote it. Yeah.
Yeah. They did some today. Still, you can look at stuff they recorded together, and it's kind of like, where are they at when they're doing some of these songs? But
I'll have to check that out.
You got to look. You got to go back and check the records. You got to go find the one, this Velvet Morning. Find this Velvet Morning. It's Nancy and him, and you'll just think, well, what was this? It's a mystery. It's a mystery to me. It's a neat song, but go look that up when we're done.
I will.
So let's do this. I want you to do one more intro to the first cut on the album, which, for personal reasons, it's a great song, but for personal reasons, I mentioned to you maybe off the air that our daughter was in the hospital working through this period. Not as drastic a situation as New York City. We got to see that on TV, but the Elmhurst Queens Mother's Day is just a special song for all those people, not just the medical people, but for everybody. And by the way, Lucy talked about weak ties, and it's like she had some idea what she was talking about. I haven't said yet, Lucy, but I have to say that Lucy's a PhD in clinical psychology.
Right. Yeah. So that comes in handy.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah. Just don't analyze me when we're done. I'm just ask questions. But when you talked about weak ties in relationships, I thought, oh, that's where I can sneak that in. So let's I'll let you go do an introduction to Elmhurst Queens of Mother's Day and then I'll let you go on about your business.
So, you know, I mentioned that we left New York for months, and that was written at the very beginning of the pandemic, when nobody knew if there were ever going to be shows again, like shows for people like me.
Right.
And I literally thought that, you know, my career might be over. I mean, that was the least of it. I mean, not, you know, we were away, we were healthy, we didn't get COVID. But, you know, everything was utterly upended. And so I was sitting in this house in rural Massachusetts watching New York on TV from afar and hearing about it from my friends who were still there, and then literally reading in the New York Times about the frontline workers. And it was, so I guess I just started writing this kind of tribute to this one sort of, you know, not a very specific person, not a real person, but kind of a composite of the various frontline workers I'd read about, and how they were sacrificing everything. And that I felt so far away from it, but also in some deep way very connected, because this is New York's my home. So it was really a tribute to New York, which was suffering so much, and to the frontline workers who were sacrificing everything.
I hope we never go back to those times.
But, yeah, me too.
The people that brought us through it on that level, on that, you know, they were the interface with what was happening, and we could be in Massachusetts, or we could be in our house seeing what's happening, but we're not there on the front lines, and all those people
that's
on the front
exactly
lines.
Right.
Yeah, that's just an amazing thing to go through. And you know what? Here, there's a variant sneaking around again.
I know.
Yeah,
there certainly
and the people that I know that have it, we don't have to talk about diseases, but people that know they have it, they didn't know they had it. It doesn't test positive for a while, so you've got it for a while, and the symptoms are a week, you know, of misery and blah, blah, blah. But I know more and more people now that seem to have that variant than had the one that you're talking about in Elmhurst.
No, I know. I mean, we don't need to get into this, but it's the most transmissible one yet.
Yeah.
So it's not good.
Yeah. Lucy Kaplansky, thank you so much for giving me music and giving me a chance to talk to you. I've enjoyed this so much.
You, Steve, so much for having me.
Well, you're welcome. Last days of summer. And go ahead and say one more time, and we'll go out with this, the first cut, Elmhurst Queens of Mother's Day. Say again where they can get it, because I want to make sure they know.
Yeah, the only place is my website, lucykaplansky.com. You can get a download and or autographed CD. Autographed CD comes with a download, or at my shows, my live shows.
And they can find your show dates and stuff on the website.
On my website,
yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Everything's on my website.
There you go. All right, Lucy, thanks so much. This is Moving Song, Elmhurst, Queens, Mother's Day. And it talks so much about that period when COVID was just everywhere and we didn't know what to do except send our front first responders out, and they did it. Not just medical, but everybody did it at that level. So great song. Thanks, Lucy. Catch you somewhere down the road then. All right.
Okay, Steve.
Thanks, Lucy. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.